This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Jan Kosofsky is with us. She's Executive Director of the Capital Area Human Services. She's held this position for 22 years. She came to Baton Rouge in 1990. She was working for the National Institute for Health. She has degrees from Rutgers and Columbia. Has been a fixture in our community for almost three decades, fighting the good fight on many fronts. And one of those that has taken great relevance in the last few years is the opioid crisis. We have an epidemic in this country and in this community. Hiller Moore, the district attorney, was with us a few weeks ago and indicated that more people may be dying of opioid abuse than from murder in Baton Rouge. And as we know, we have, unfortunately, around 100 murders a year in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So this is a significant issue, still in many cases largely under radar, but what is being done to combat this dreaded epidemic? Jan Kosofsky?
Hi. Well, I guess I would start off with talking about the work that we've been doing across this community for the past 2 years concerning opioid abuse and misuse. We pulled together a lot of community leaders as well as local providers in different arenas to discuss how the opioid epidemic is affecting the community, but also what they can do. And so Sharon Broom, our mayor, requested the Capital Area through the Behavioral Health Collaborative go ahead and formulate a plan for how this community would respond. And our plan was released in December. And I'm happy to say that the many different sectors that are a part of it are actively working.
Well, it's a case in which this affects all sectors of society, rich, poor, black, white, men, women, and yet we don't talk about it as much as we should if it's as significant as it is, and I'm sure it is. Why are we not addressing this full-throated in a way that would perhaps do some good?
Well, I think if you look at how we've dealt with alcohol abuse and other substance abuse historically in this country, it's kind of been a taboo subject that, first of all, the person that has the problem isn't sure about coming forward and afraid to come forward and get help, especially when they're using illicit drugs. But also family members feel a stigma and many times are ashamed. And all of this contributes to people not being feeling like they can be forthcoming to come forward to get help.
877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org for Jan Kosofsky. Max and Hammond, good morning, Max. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Opioids do help with pain, and they're affordable. My doctors tell me that medical marijuana would also help with pain. Yet, there's been a ridiculously long delay in making it available, and when it's available, they have no pricing restrictions on it. I just would like your guests to comment on that situation.
Sure, and I think that you bring up a really important part about the opioid epidemic, and that is a lot of people came to misuse or become addicted to these powerful pills very legitimately through going to physicians, legitimate physicians, and getting legitimate prescriptions, but people didn't realize how addictive they were. The point that you bring up about the use of marijuana to treat pain and also the need for other non-opiate pain relievers has become a really large issue. And one of the biggest problems, like you mentioned, is that insurers haven't necessarily embraced these other non-opioid approaches. And that's one of the points that we make in our plan is that oftentimes the physician doesn't really have a choice because the patient and the physician really wouldn't know the cost of these alternative medicines. People are looking at physical therapy. They're looking at other ways to treat pain through nerve block. But the question is when will and can the insurers step up to the plate so that people have a financial alternative?
How do people get hooked? Does it start with some kind of physical ailment that requires opioids to relieve the pain, or is it friends who are encouraging them? How does this usually start?
Well, I think you just mentioned two of the top areas. Number one is legitimate use of prescriptions that were legitimately written by physicians. The reality is, if you look at the history of the use of opioids, is people really did not realize how addictive these synthetic opioids were, including the physicians. And now what we see is that as few as 3 to 5 days, people can get hooked. And if you look at the number of people that are given these types of pain relievers for really addressing short-term need, that oftentimes the short-term need grows much longer. And therefore, there's been changes in legislation with regard to the number of days for first-time opiate users that's limited them to 7 days. And we just had a presentation by a Blue Cross as well as the Medicaid chief pharmacist to show the number of prescriptions have gone down, and that's a good thing. The other thing that you point to, Jim, is the use of opiates by people who they weren't prescribed for. And what the belief at this point is that 50% of the people that become addicted to opioids became addicted with medications that were given to them or taken from somebody else. And that's why one of the number one preventive measures is to clear your medicine cabinet of opioids that you're no longer using, that you don't need, or that have expired, and taking them to legitimate drop-off places like its police department and other locked drop-off boxes.
How much is OxyContin a part of this?
Oxy is just one of the different types of pills that would fall under the opioids. And I think a lot of times people don't really know the different names. I'll just give you a few different names. Morphine, fentanyl, alfentanil, codeine, hydrocodone, oxycodone, and methadone. All of those are synthetic opioids.
It would seem there are very few people who have been addicts who are national spokespeople for this epidemic, at least in an effort to combat it. Is it a difficult thing for people to acknowledge that they've had this problem and may continue to fight it?
I think that it's very difficult, as I started off, is the stigma of substance abuse, number one. And then certainly if you're talking about heroin, for many, many, many years, people really felt like that was something that people were using on the street and falling down. And the reality is that a lot of people use heroin that are still functioning, and a lot of people use methadone legitimately, and they're able to function because of it. I think, as I started off, is the stigma of coming out and talking about an addiction is a very hard thing to face, and it has ramifications and can have ramifications for you personally, but as well as your family.
A listener brings up Rush Limbaugh, and like him or not, and I suspect a lot of our listeners don't like him a lot, he did overcome a serious addiction to OxyContin, which affected his health and impaired his hearing. He would be an eloquent spokesperson, wouldn't he, if he chose to come forward and use his megaphone to talk about this?
Well, he certainly is a speaker, and I'm sure that he would do justice, because so many people, regardless of what side of the aisle or what socioeconomic class they fall into, it is a hard road to overcome this addiction. But I will say that I'm very grateful that in D.C., one thing that everyone has agreed on, and that is funding for people who have an opioid addiction, that in the past, the only resource they had were abstinence-based programs. And I think most people realize that the detox from opioids is pretty severe, and most people are afraid to go through detox on their own. And so luckily, with the help of the federal government and, I guess, better science, now we have more medication to help people ease through the detox and really go on to lowering dose gradually to help get them off. I don't know the route that Rush Limbaugh took, but I would assume that it was something like I just described.
877-217-5757 is your number. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org, and we're going to spend some more time with Jan Kosofsky, the Executive Director of Capital Area Human Services for 22 years. We also, later in the hour, hear from Lamar White, the publisher of Bayou Brief. But when we return, we'll pick up the discussion with Jan about opioid abuse and a few other matters in Baton Rouge. And A listener asks about Narcon, and we'll discuss that when we return after this pause for the news on WRKF. Jan Kosofsky with us for a few more minutes. She is Executive Director of the Capital Area Human Services. And if you'd like to get in under the wire with Jan, again, 877-217-5757. And before we went to the break, a listener asked about Narcan. How does this work for those who have an opioid addiction?
Well, I am very glad that the listener called in and asked about Narcan. Narcan is almost like an EpiPen for people who have an opioid addiction, and it actually acts as a reversal to overdoses. Capital Area received a fair number of the kits. It is in a nasal spray form, and it is very easily administered. We have been providing kits across the board to police departments, fire departments, family members of people who have an opioid addiction, and also outreach individuals who go out into the community where there's a high number of overdoses. It saves lives, and we have done as much as we could to roll out about 2,000 kits at this point. And if you have a family member or if you have an opioid addiction yourself, it would be very wise for you to have it with you.
All right. A story that another listener asked about in today's Advocate, it's the top story in the Metro section, suicide rates rise among black men. Is this related in any way to the opioid crisis?
Well, I will say yes and no. So as you mentioned before, I was a researcher at NIH before I came to Louisiana, and I've always been looking for root causes. And you ask, why do people even start using alternate medications and alcohol to change their reality? And I think one of the points that was brought up at the program yesterday, which I was able to attend on African-American male suicide, is that people lose hope. Or they think that there's a way to just avoid dealing with the troubles that they feel are insurmountable. And so oftentimes that leads to risky behaviors, but also can, in time, if it's not intervened upon, lead to intentional or unintentional suicides. And so I think that you really could roll it all together, that oftentimes people look to drugs as an escape, and what they will find is that many times it causes a bigger problem than what they were facing in the first place. And I believe that the call to action is that people need to feel more comfortable about seeking help and understanding that help will work, mm-hmm. and that oftentimes the answer lies within that person, but their perception is clouded and they do not see any hope at that time.
You also have been involved in trying to fight gambling addiction, and we had the story surface over the weekend about the head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana having a gambling addiction, and the problems that Karen Carter Peterson is experiencing are not unique to her, are they?
Not at all. And we have a very active program here. We actually have people coming from across the state. We have a really wonderful clinician who does her magic, and she keeps it really real. And she makes sure that when people are in front of her, as she said, you're not going to say anything that I'm going to roll my eyes at. I've heard it all. People come to all sorts of addictions for many different reasons. And gambling addiction, I think people are starting to understand, is really the same as an addiction to a substance. When you look at the brain chemistry, it causes the same changes that you see in somebody that is using a substance. And it brings them happiness at the time. Unfortunately, it leads them to a lot of different problems that impact their entire family as well.
Dee in Prairieville. Dee, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jan Kosofsky. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Jim. I'd like to see what she has to say about, I think a lot of people, especially with no mental health help in this, especially in Louisiana, I think a lot of people might be self-medicating. I'd like to hear what she has to say about that.
And that's absolutely true. I mean, you have people that come to addiction because of recreation, playing around, certainly kids in high school and college, peer pressure. But you do have a lot of people with mental health problems who come to use to self-medicate. And in fact, the statistics are anywhere between 50 and 85% of people that find themselves in a substance abuse cycle actually have underlying mental health problems that they're seeking to avoid by using these substances or to feel better. And that's why it's really important that people go to therapists that understand how it's all one big ball of wax, that you really can't address a lot of the substance abuse issues without understanding the underlying initiative, why that person chose to go that route. But absolutely, I'm glad that you brought that up, because even among clinicians, you'll find that there's stigma about substance abuse, and you can't deal with one without the other.
Well, for those who would like more information about what you do with Capital Area Human Services, what's the best way to reach you, Jan?
Well, I think most people are comfortable first approaching it in the privacy of their own home or on their laptop or on their phone. And our website is a really good resource to find out what we have to offer. And you could go to realhealthbr.com, or you can call us at 225-925-1906.
Where, could you repeat that again? The
sure.
Phone number?
225-925-1906.
Thank you, Jan. It's always a pleasure. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.